Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to review the questions. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. Choose the correct answer A, B, or C. Look at the questions, then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
It isn't long ago that FUNAI, the Brazilian governmental agency in charge of indigenous Indian affairs, announced that seven members of an isolated Indian tribe emerged from the Amazon and made peaceful contact with people in a village near the Peruvian border. Adam Perkins reports.
Shocking as it may seem, the event itself could have been anticipated. The tribesmen had been spotted by local villagers in Brazil's Acre state as they approached the village to steal crops or tools. Today, we're going to discuss what made these tribesmen come out of the wild with anthropologist Lynette Smith.
Adam, surely it wasn't lack of food or equipment that drove the tribesmen out of the jungle, but fear. With the help of translators, they explained that they were driven out of their homes as a result of violent attacks by outsiders, who probably were illegal loggers or cocaine traffickers. Their elder relatives were massacred and their houses set on fire. So their decision to emerge out of the rainforest was a conscious one. And contrary to popular belief, they know far more about the outside world than we think. But from their contact with the outside world, they haven't formed a favorable impression of outsiders. Loggers and oil prospectors raise their land and homes, and outsiders that come in peace, like missionaries, threaten them with diseases like chickenpox, flu, and the common cold. Such diseases would keep us in bed for like a week or so, but to someone without a reinforced immune system, they could prove fatal.
Experience has taught them that the white man is only to be feared. For example, for decades, Brazil viewed the Amazon as an empty place which could be developed and exploited, and indigenous people stood in the way, so their homes were leveled with little or no warning. This attitude was slightly changed in the 70s and 80s, and the Brazilian government tried to establish a peaceful relationship with tribesmen by setting up attraction posts, where natives were offered metal tools or other things that they might find valuable. The ultimate aim was to get these people assimilated or relocated and, in any case, lure them out of hiding.
Today, an estimated 50 tribes are believed to be living in the Amazon rainforests in Brazil and Peru. The Brazilian and Peruvian governments have realized the need to preserve the land these tribes live on, but illegal loggers enter the forests and wreak havoc. Another impediment is the exploitation of Peru's rich oil supply by a French company that intends to search for oil in northern Peru, where two tribes are known to live. The company obtained access to this region when it bought the rights from a U.S.-owned oil company and is in line with the Peruvian president's vision of turning Peru into a petrol-producing giant. Perhaps he doesn't see the bigger picture, but Perupetro, the organization that governs oil prospecting in Peru, is trying to help preserve lands inhabited by tribes.
Now you will hear the segment again.
It isn't long ago that FUNAI, the Brazilian governmental agency in charge of indigenous Indian affairs, announced that seven members of an isolated Indian tribe emerged from the Amazon and made peaceful contact with people in a village near the Peruvian border. Adam Perkins reports.
Shocking as it may seem, the event itself could have been anticipated. The tribesmen had been spotted by local villagers in Brazil's Acre state as they approached the village to steal crops or tools. Today, we're going to discuss what made these tribesmen come out of the wild with anthropologist Lynette Smith.
Adam, surely it wasn't lack of food or equipment that drove the tribesmen out of the jungle, but fear. With the help of translators, they explained that they were driven out of their homes as a result of violent attacks by outsiders, who probably were illegal loggers or cocaine traffickers. Their elder relatives were massacred and their houses set on fire, so their decision to emerge out of the rainforest was a conscious one. And contrary to popular belief, they know far more about the outside world than we think. But from their contact with the outside world, they haven't formed a favorable impression of outsiders. Loggers and oil prospectors raise their land and homes, and outsiders that come in peace, like missionaries, threaten them with diseases like chickenpox, flu, and the common cold. Such diseases would keep us in bed for like a week or so, but to someone without a reinforced immune system, they could prove fatal.
Experience has taught them that the white man is only to be feared. For example, for decades, Brazil viewed the Amazon as an empty place which could be developed and exploited, and indigenous people stood in the way, so their homes were leveled with little or no warning. This attitude was slightly changed in the 70s and 80s, and the Brazilian government tried to establish a peaceful relationship with tribesmen by setting up attraction posts, where natives were offered metal tools or other things that they might find valuable. The ultimate aim was to get these people assimilated or relocated and, in any case, lure them out of hiding.
Today, an estimated 50 tribes are believed to be living in the Amazon rainforests in Brazil and Peru. The Brazilian and Peruvian governments have realized the need to preserve the land these tribes live on, but illegal loggers enter the forests and wreak havoc. Another impediment is the exploitation of Peru's rich oil supply by a French company that intends to search for oil in northern Peru, where two tribes are known to live. The company obtained access to this region when it bought the rights from a U.S.-owned oil company and is in line with the Peruvian president's vision of turning Peru into a petrol-producing giant. Perhaps he doesn't see the bigger picture, but Perupetro, the organization that governs oil prospecting in Peru, is trying to help preserve lands inhabited by tribes.
Number 39. What is the report mainly about? Number 40. What drove the tribesmen out of the jungle? Number 41. What is a myth surrounding native tribes of the Amazon? Number 42. Why are common diseases threatening for native populations? Number 43. How did the Brazilian government try to befriend native tribes? Number 44. What does the anthropologist imply about the Peruvian president? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
All of us have experienced a sleepless night at some time in our lives, and sleep deprivation has made us tired and irritable, but at some point, we all recover from it. All of us, except people suffering from a disease known as fatal familial insomnia, or FFI. These people will die, Rodney Burns reports.
FFI is a disease that wasn't documented as such until 1986. It's a hereditary genetic disorder caused by a defective gene on one pair of autosomes, that is our non-sex chromosomes. Geneticist Edith Kennedy is here for more.
FFI is a rare disease in which a normal protein found in the body, the cellular protein PRPC, is defective. The first symptoms of the disease appear when the person is in their early 50s, and the disease progresses rapidly. Some patients may live for 2 to 3 years, while others may die within a year. The first symptom is, of course, insomnia, but soon psychiatric complications appear, including panic attacks, paranoia, and phobias. During this initial stage, patients report vivid dreaming when they are able to sleep. During stage 2, sufferers begin hallucinating and become agitated, and there is short-term memory loss. Personality and mood changes, as well as motor disorders, including movement and gait changes. In the third stage of the disease, the wake-sleep cycle becomes completely disrupted, and total insomnia begins. The final stage, stage 4, is characterized by rapid cognitive decline and dementia, and ultimately causes inability to voluntarily move or speak, followed by coma and, inevitably, death.
All this sounds really frightening, Dr. Kennedy. How is this condition diagnosed, and most importantly, can it be cured?
FFI is the result of pathological changes in the central nervous system, and insomnia is only a symptom of these changes. These changes involve the death of neurons in a part of the brain called the thalamus, which is responsible for managing your motor functions and carrying sensory information where it needs to go. When these neurons die, they cannot be replaced. Instead, support cells that help the neurons communicate take over their role, but they can't perform the important functions of the neurons that have died. Diagnosing the disease is extremely difficult and requires a series of tests, ranging from simple blood tests to specialized exams that measure the patterns for electrical activity in the patient's brain. It has been found that the brain waves of people symptomatic with the disease don't follow normal sleep patterns. Even in the first stage of the disease, FFI appears to cause the electrical activity in the brain to slow down, and the patients get shorter and shorter amounts of deep REM sleep daily. At the moment, there is no known cure for FFI. The only sedative that seems to have an impact against FFI, the narcotic sedative GHB, may help induce sleep and relieve other symptoms of sympathetic nervous system hyperactivity by decreasing both heart rate and body temperature in FFI patients. The effectiveness of experimental treatments is being researched, and some preliminary findings suggest that some therapies might have the potential to relieve symptoms and, most importantly, extend the lives of FFI patients. Stem cell researchers have high hopes that their therapy might be able to replace those vital neurons one day.
Now you will hear the segment again.
All of us have experienced a sleepless night at some time in our lives, and sleep deprivation has made us tired and irritable, but at some point, we all recover from it. All of us, except people suffering from a disease known as fatal familial insomnia, or FFI. These people will die, Rodney Burns reports.
FFI is a disease that wasn't documented as such until 1986. It's a hereditary genetic disorder caused by a defective gene on one pair of autosomes, that is our non-sex chromosomes. Geneticist Edith Kennedy is here for more.
FFI is a rare disease in which a normal protein found in the body, the cellular protein PRPC, is defective. The first symptoms of the disease appear when the person is in their early 50s, and the disease progresses rapidly. Some patients may live for 2 to 3 years, while others may die within a year. The first symptom is, of course, insomnia, but soon psychiatric complications appear, including panic attacks, paranoia, and phobias. During this initial stage, patients report vivid dreaming when they are able to sleep. During stage 2, sufferers begin hallucinating and become agitated, and there is short-term memory loss, personality and mood changes, as well as motor disorders, including movement and gait changes. In the third stage of the disease, the wake-sleep cycle becomes completely disrupted, and total insomnia begins. The final stage, stage 4, is characterized by rapid cognitive decline and dementia, and ultimately causes inability to voluntarily move or speak, followed by coma and, inevitably, death.
All this sounds really frightening, Dr. Kennedy. How is this condition diagnosed, and most importantly, can it be cured?
FFI is the result of pathological changes in the central nervous system, and insomnia is only a symptom of these changes. These changes involve the death of neurons in a part of the brain called the thalamus, which is responsible for managing your motor functions and carrying sensory information where it needs to go. When these neurons die, they cannot be replaced. Instead, support cells that help the neurons communicate take over their role, but they can't perform the important functions of the neurons that have died. Diagnosing the disease is extremely difficult and requires a series of tests, ranging from simple blood tests to specialized exams that measure the patterns for electrical activity in the patient's brain. It has been found that the brain waves of people symptomatic with the disease don't follow normal sleep patterns. Even in the first stage of the disease, FFI appears to cause the electrical activity in the brain to slow down, and the patients get shorter and shorter amounts of deep REM sleep daily. At the moment, there is no known cure for FFI. The only sedative that seems to have an impact against FFI, the narcotic sedative GHB, may help induce sleep and relieve other symptoms of sympathetic nervous system hyperactivity by decreasing both heart rate and body temperature in FFI patients. The effectiveness of experimental treatments is being researched, and some preliminary findings suggest that some therapies might have the potential to relieve symptoms and, most importantly, extend the lives of FFI patients. Stem cell researchers have high hopes that their therapy might be able to replace those vital neurons one day.
Number 45. What can generally be inferred about FFI? Number 46. In which stage of the disease do the sufferers experience delusions? Number 47. What symptoms characterize the third stage of FFI? Number 48. Which of the following is not performed by healthy thalamus neurons? Number 49. In what way is FFI patients' brain activity different? Number 50. Why is FFI an incurable disease so far, at least? End of the listening test.